to bring our reading, and then we'll dig into this together. We carry on this morning in the Master Plan series. So we're going to do from Exodus to Deuteronomy. So just four books this morning. Kevin is going to read just one chapter from one of those.
Full chapter. It's Exodus chapter 19. Exodus 19 and the first 13 verses. In the third month after the Israelites left Egypt, on the very day they came to the desert of Sinai. After they set out from Rephidim, they entered the desert of Sinai, and Israel camped there in the desert in front of the mountain. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, "This is what you are to say to the house of Jacob, and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you are to speak to the Israelites." So Moses went back and summoned the elders of the people and set before them all the words the Lord had commanded him to speak. The people responded together, "We will do everything the Lord has said." So Moses brought their answer back to the Lord. The Lord said to Moses, "I am going to come to you in a dense cloud, so that the people will hear me speaking with you and will always put their trust in you." Then Moses told the Lord what the people had said. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. Have them wash their clothes and be ready by the third day, because on that day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. Put limits for the people around the mountain and tell them, 'Be careful that you do not go up on the mountain or touch the foot of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death. He shall be stoned or shot with arrows. Not a hand is to be laid on him. Whether man or animal, he shall not be permitted to live. Only when the ram's horn sounds a long blast may they go up to the mountain."
Thanks, Kevin. That verse 12 is a bit like, whoa, isn't it? You know? If you touch the mountain, he'll be put to death. Whoever touches the mountain will be put to death. There'll be stones shot with arrows. Not a man or an animal shall be permitted to live. Whoa, that is strong, isn't it? I'm going to try and understand why that is a little bit this morning as we trace the next part of the story along. You'll see from the slide here, what we see in this passage, bit that we're going to follow through today. I want to really pick out this part of the character of God, that God is holy, that God is pure. That's what it means. He's pure, he's set apart, he's different, he is completely untouched. He can't be treated lightly. He's different. There is nothing defiled. There's nothing imperfect about God. He's perfect at every point, every way. And he must be treated as such. That in a nutshell is why when God comes down onto the mountain, they can't even touch it. Because you can't just treat God any old how. So that's kind of the overall thing that we're going to look at. But we'll see that through the narrative of the story. Remember in Master Plan, we're going through, trying to pick out the thread of the story that runs through the whole of the Bible. Last time we left the children of Israel. Remember, Israel was Jacob. Jacob had had his name changed to Israel when he'd become a fully committed follower of God and committed to honoring him. He had 12 children. The the 12 boys had the children. Remember the bit with Moses? They ended up in Egypt, lived in Egypt for 400 odd years. In that time, they'd multiplied to such a degree that the Egyptians became fearful of them and started to oppress them and put them into slavery. That was where we left the story. So these people that God has said, I'm going to bless you, are now slaves. And they're slaves, and life is so hard for them that they cry out to God. They say, God, would you help us? We can't believe that this is where it should be for us, your people. Would you please come and rescue us? And God, in Exodus chapter 1, hears, we're told, hears their cry and sends them a leader. And the man that he chooses is a man called Moses. I'm not clicking on, Stuart, for some reason, right? So we got Moses. Now, I don't know what picture comes to your mind when you hear Moses. If you're a Christian, if you might not know anything about Moses at all. Some of you might never even have heard of him. So you're not going to think anything. We'll introduce you to Moses this morning. Key man in the Bible story. But others of you, I wonder what picture comes to your mind when you hear of Moses. Let me tell you a bit about Moses to start with. He was an Israelite by birth, but grew up and was raised in the palace in Egypt. So he was raised as one of Pharaoh's own grandchildren. He was highly thought of. He had every privilege. No expense was spared on him. He had the best education, the best training, the best experience. But when he grew up, he made a choice that was life-changing. He realized that he actually was not an Egyptian. He belonged to the despised Israelites. And so he walked out from that life of privilege to live as one of the Israelites, his natural flesh and blood. By the time God called him, he was actually living several hundred miles away, the other side of a desert. He was in hiding from Pharaoh, who he'd walked away from, and the Israelites, who he'd wound up when he tried to help them sometime previous. It's a detail I can't tell you about this morning. He is, one day he's out living as a shepherd, and he's out in the desert, and he's confronted with this, the burning bush. And out of this bush he hears a voice. And he goes over to the bush, and he's told, take off your shoes, because the ground you're standing on is holy ground. This was the voice of God. And God commissioned Moses to go back to Israel, or go back to Egypt, and to lead the people of Israel out into the promised land, as he called it. Back to the place where Abram, if you remember, had first settled the land of Canaan. That was going to go, they were going to go back there after all this time, and they were going to have it as their land, fulfilling the promise God made. Do you remember, if you were here last week, we read in Genesis chapter 15, it said that you will go away to and you will be slaves in a land that's not your own, and after 400 years you will come back to this land. This is the fulfillment of that. Isn't it marvelous? Isn't it wonderful how things work? Moses goes back to Pharaoh, the leader in Egypt, and those infamous words, let my people go. And the response is, no, I will not. And so we get the 10 plagues saga, right? We've got the 10 plagues. It's a battle of wills between Pharaoh and God. There is only one winner, and it's God. And eventually the people are let go. The last plague was the plague of the death of the firstborn. I just want to flag this up. I'm not going to tell you more about it. The only way that the Israelites escaped this plague, the plague was that the firstborn in every family in the nation was going to die. But God said to the Israelites, if you take the blood of an animal and put it on the doorposts and the lintel around the door, when the angel goes through, the angel of death goes through the land, sees the blood, that house will be protected from this particular plague that's coming on the country. And the firstborn will be saved and rescued. Remember that, sheltering under the blood. That becomes hugely important in the story. As a result of the plagues, eventually Pharaoh lets the Israelites go. And they start on the journey towards the promised land. They leave, they experience the miracle of the Red Sea. I wonder, what picture did you have of Moses when I said to you, what do you picture of Moses? I said this to Andrea. She said, a man with a staff by the Red Sea. Yeah? How many others of you had that kind of image in there? Yeah, I can see a good number of nods on that. You may have had other ones. Tell me about it later on. So we've got God doing the impossible. The Egyptian army has come to chase the Israelites to take them back. They're stuck between the rock and a hard place, devil and the deep blue sea, whatever you want to call it. But God made a way, and he opens up the Red Sea. Incredible thing. The Israelites go across, the sea comes back and separates them from the Egyptians. They are safe at last. There's about 1.5 million, probably 1.5 million odd people at this point. Moses is the leader, and they set off on their journey to the land of the promised land, the land of Canaan. This huge mass of people are walking. They get as far as Mount Sinai. That was where the reading that Kevin read for us this morning. And it is here that one of the most important, one of the most strategic events happened in the history of God's people. So we do need to pause here and just register the significance of what happened at Mount Sinai. You see, if we miss this, then we'll really struggle with what happens for the rest of the story. Because whilst Abraham and God's calling of Abraham and the promises he made to Abraham, they were key. But what happens at Sinai is kind of like the next key to unlock the way God treated these people. So we've got to pause. We've got to get this. At Sinai, these people, having witnessed and experienced for themselves the incredible power of God in so many ways, the plagues, these are people who saw them, they experienced them, they lived through them. Every time a plague hit the Egyptians, the Israelites were spared. You do realize that, don't you? The plagues didn't affect the Israelites. There was always this demarcation between the Israelites and the Egyptians. So what happened to the Egyptians didn't happen to the Israelites. So every time the flies or the frogs or the blood or anything happened, they're kind of thinking, it's not happening to us. So they're seeing this thing. They're seeing God open the way for them to go across the Red Sea. They've seen the miracles. They've seen the power of God. So many ways. They've had miraculous supplies of food by this time. Water coming out of a rock when they were thirsty and they'd got no water. They'd had every possible way almost of seeing God's care for them. And here at Mount Sinai, God says to them that he will adopt them. He will take them as his people and make them as a nation. He will form them into a nation. They will be his people. Not just as by virtue of being the descendants of Abram, but now as their decision themselves. He says, and Stuart, can you click the next one? This is what he says. You've seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you will obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all the nations, you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. This is the start, the first time the word kingdom is used. The kingdom that develops into the kingdom of God. You will be mine. I'm going to look after you. Of all the nations, it's going to be this special thing. I'm going to make you a kingdom of priests. Priests were the people that represented God to people and people to God. They were going to be the ones through whom God showed himself, revealed himself to the rest of the nations on earth. And he says, I will look after you. I will take care of you. I'll provide for you. I'll give you everything that you need. What a wonderful, wonderful privilege this was. Offering them every wonderful, imaginable thing that they could ever have. He's setting before them a unique relationship and a unique role and a unique purpose. He would be working through them. They would be his. Covenanted together. A covenant is stronger than a promise. This is God saying, I will do this. I will make sure that if you just say this, I will look after you and take care of you. Incredible privilege. There was one proviso. The proviso was that they would need to let him be their king. They had to agree at the start to let him be the ruler. Yes, you could be God. We will do things your way. It's like God saying, if you want the blessings and the privileges, then this is the way it has to be. Now, if you were made that offer, if you were one of the Israelites, what would you do? It strikes me it's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it? You've got Almighty God saying, I will give you these things. I will look after you. I will provide for you. I'll care for you. You're going to have a unique role, a unique place, a unique purpose, a unique privilege. I'm going to take you through to the promised land. You're going to have a land flow with milk and honey. I will do these. All you need to do is let me be the king. It's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it? It's a wonderful opportunity. I ask you the question, if you'd been one of them, what would you say? The reality is he does offer us that today. He says the same to us today. He makes us the same offer. We too can become part of that people, part of that kingdom. Not the Jewish nation, but the kingdom of God. He offers us this privilege to come to be one of his people with a unique and a privileged role with his protection and his provision. We can become one of God's people with the prospect of enjoying his protection and his care beyond our wildest dreams. What do you say? What do you say to that offer? It's there for you today in Jesus. Just come to Jesus and say, yes, Jesus, I'm going to bow before you and I'm going to let you be my Lord and I'm going to let you be my King. I'm going to let go of my life and I'm going to let you go and receive all that you have for me. The offer is there. Many of us have done that. Some of you will say, well, it hasn't worked out. I don't see many evidences of all those wonderful things you're saying. What you need to understand is that he doesn't promise them a life without thorns. He doesn't say there'll be no problems and no difficulties. He says, I will be with you, though. I will help you through those things and you will get to the promised land. And we have heaven to look forwards to, the promised land. There's more to it than that, and I don't want to go off because we're trying to follow the story through. But these people here, let's go back to Exodus 19. Not surprisingly, the people of Moses' day, when he took the message down to them, and they said, yes, we will do this. And so officially and as one, they voluntarily, willingly became God's people. They entered the agreement. The Bible word is the covenant. Remember that word because it comes up again and again. It's the basis of everything that God will do with them. He treats them as a covenant people. Those he has entered into an agreement with. Those are people who have voluntarily said, yes, you can be the king. The covenant, really important. So as I said, these events at Sinai, this agreement, this coming together of God and the people is crucial in the master plan. They are the context of what flows through in the rest of the story. What God does, what he says, the way he treats them are all flowing out from this covenant that he has with them. And so having made the covenant, what we find is that immediately after that, he gives them the instructions as to how they're to relate to him, how they're to worship him, how they're to treat each other. So we have the house rules. He gives them the house rules to start with. The rules of the family. If they're God's people, they've got to have his rules. It's no longer them just making up what they think. They've got to do it God's way. So he gives them the rules. We know them as the Ten Commandments. You can see the visual on here. Not many, just 10. Nice, easy, round number to remember. It's like God is saying, now you're my people. This is how things are going to be done round here. So a few things you need to remember. Some things that you're absolutely not to do. Basically, they're rules about the way they treat God, the first four or five. The last part is the way they're to treat each other. It's not a series of random rules that God sort of made up on a whim. They're actually a great window. Last week we talked about a keyhole, looking through the keyhole at the little incidents about God. What kind of person would do this? The Ten Commandments are a vast window for us to look through to see the nature and the character of God. What he's like, what he doesn't like. What we see is he's not to be treated like anything else. He's to be honored and respected. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make any idols to bow down to them. There is this specialness, this holiness that comes through here. But we also see when he talks about the ways they treat each other that he's a God that delights in fairness and thoughtfulness and honesty and trustworthiness and faithfulness and kindness. That he hates pain, that he hates pride, that he hates selfishness, that he hates lying, that he hates fickleness and disrespect. So he sets out these rules for them. They're great, aren't they? I've often asked people, you know, if you could have a set of rules, what would you, for a country, what would you have? And I don't find many people offering anything other than the Ten Commandments in terms of fairness. It shows how wonderful and great our God is. There was a problem, though. God was dealing with sinners. He's given them a set of absolute rules, but they were sinners, and he knew they wouldn't be able to keep these. He knew they would fall short of these things. And so, as we go through Exodus, after Exodus chapter 20, as we go through Exodus and we go through into Leviticus and Numbers, we find that God reveals to them what they're to do if they break the rules. The plan was wonderfully simple. Do you remember Adam and Eve, right back at the beginning? Do you remember what God said to Adam and Eve? If you sin, you will die. Death was the punishment, the consequence of sin. Now, the setting is different. The whole thing's been reset, rebooted. We've got a new set of people, a new beginning. It's different times, but the principle remains the same. God's standards don't offer. If you sin, you will die. If you break these rules, you will die. He knew that they would break the rules, so he set in place a system so that that didn't happen. When Adam sinned, it had catastrophic consequences. God didn't want that to happen with this new kingdom he was setting up. So from the start, he had a plan. It wasn't any good just pretending that the sin didn't matter. It did matter. It would put, again, a gulf between God and them. And he didn't want that to happen. So he sets in place a way of overcoming, of dealing with that sin. And it starts off with, next one, Stuart, we should have a picture here of a sacrifice, a system of they could sacrifice animals instead of them. It was like this. Instead of you dying because of your sin, I'll accept the death of an animal in your place. If you sin, if nothing happens, you will die and we will be forever separated. God says, look, I don't want that to happen. So here's the thing. If you sin, here's an animal that you can sacrifice. And that will appease my anger. That will satisfy my holiness so that I can look on you still with love and kindness and justice, and you can still be my people. The point is this, sin is serious. It can't just be overlooked and winked at by us or by God. It requires action. God's holiness, his purity demands that which is not right isn't just ignored, but it's dealt with. And that's what these early books of the Bible are about. These people of God living in relation with God, how they should live and what happens when they don't live, how they relate and how they worship God. So in Exodus and Leviticus and the book of Numbers, you'll find lots of details as to what they, the sacrifices they need to bring. Not to curry God's favor, but to deal with their sins, to deal with their offenses. And that's Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers. In Numbers, the story carries on and it's woven into the details. I'm going to wrap up really quickly now. Stuart, can we have the next one? In Numbers, we find they carry on and you've got the story of them journeying towards Canaan. The thing is, they didn't go in. They got there and they said, they sent some spies out. Spies came back with reports. There were 12 spies, one from each of the tribes. 10 of them came back and said, oh man, no chance. You just need to see the size of those cities. You just need to see those people. You know, these are heavily armed defenders. They are huge. The cities, walls, we've got no chance. We've no weapons. We're not a fighting force. We can't do this. We've come out here on a wild goose chase. And all the people are, oh no. It's two of them, Joshua and Caleb. They say, no, of course we can. We've got God on our side. We're God's people. Remember his promise? Remember the covenant he made to us? Come on, we've got to go in. It looks impossible, but with God, then it can be done. And they have this meeting. There's a nation. They can listen to Caleb and Joshua, or are they going to listen to these other 10 spies? The tragedy is they listen to the majority. And they decided, no, we can't go in. We're going to go back. God comes and he says through Moses, he says, look, okay, this is the deal. Because you've rejected, because you've said this is impossible, because you don't have faith in me, then you're not going to go in, at least not yet. Everybody over the age of 20 is going to die. Once you've all died off, then I'll take the next generation in. And so they spend 40 years wandering around in the wilderness whilst that generation of the 20 plus dies off. And only then can they go in. In that time, Joshua takes over from Moses. And he's going to be the one that leads them in to the promised land. And we'll pick up the story there the next time. What have we learned today? Let's just summarize this. Hope that's helped you to hold that together. We've learned, overall, this passage is about the holiness, the separateness, the otherness, the purity of God, and where all these sacrifices and that fit in. It's because God is holy, because he's covenanted with his people. He sets in place this whole thing, but it's because God is utterly holy. His standards are absolute. His kingdom, we saw, is a wonderful privilege to be part of. And we get the offer of that. And the way we get our sins dealt with is not by an animal, but by Jesus, who died once and for all. And all we have to do is believe him and trust him and receive him as Savior and Lord. It is that simple. And the blessings then flow through from that. He provides a way to deal with the consequences of breaking the rules. We've said that. And the last one is salutary. The failure of faith results in failure to enjoy the blessings. So many times people come and they're talk to me and say, why is this happening? And so often it's because of a failure somewhere of trusting God, frustration and disappointment, because they're not willing to trust God in the city, living with fear rather than living in faith. I'm not saying, I just need to throw this caveat in, I'm not saying that every bad thing that happens is because we don't have faith. But the way we deal with that so often is. How we deal with the bad things, the tragedies, the hurt that we have, the pain, the illness, and all of those things. So often, the struggle we have is not that God allows them, but it's the way that we deal with those things and whether we will trust God in the midst of those things. Time is well and truly gone. Two questions. Are you part of the kingdom? If you're part of that kingdom, then it behoves us to live like it. it behoves us to live like it, to honour God, who's called us to be his people, that through us, his word, his message would go out into the world, that we would be, you know, like God meant the Israelites to be a kind of a magnet to draw people to him. If we're God's people, it behoves us to live that we would be a magnet that other people would want to come and know him as well. Maybe some of you aren't yet part of that kingdom. Then why not? Why not? He offers you forgiveness. He offers you his help. He offers you protection. He offers you adoption to his family. I mean, who would not, in their right mind, who would not want the God of all the universe, the creator God, the God of all power, the God of all love, the God of all compassion, to be their father? He offers that to you today through Jesus. Let me plead with you. Let me exhort you. Let me encourage you. Let me do anything else I could do to invite you to come and put your faith willingly, trustingly in Jesus and enjoy the blessings that he brings to you. I hope that's been a help for you this morning, just tracing it through a little bit further, seeing how it all fits in together. I'm away next week. I'm taking the services at Stokeash Baptist Church again. You've got the pastor from Mickfield here, Mark Howson. Mark hasn't been here for years. He did a sizable weekend for us, one of the church weekends away many years ago. So some of you will remember him. He's a lovely guy. Do plan to come next week if you possibly can. And we'll come back to this in a couple of weeks' time and pick up the story. Let's